part of the problem. There are people who need jobs. There are people who need homes. There are people who need alcohol and drug rehab. There are people who need mental health services.
Nor should we characterize all the politicians as morally ill, because after all, there are some politicians who are simply a little timid, let's say.
And they're visionary. So the campground, on some level, serves the needs of all of those on at least a temporary basis. And for some of them, I think a campground could be a visionary community. But that's down the line somewhere. Thank you, Robert.
Hey, Barbara. I hate to see you go. In fact, what I'm going to do is give you a preview of what you may want to expect if you come again. Some subjects we haven't covered that I think perhaps our listeners are interested in. And you can actually hear this in the car if you want to take off and hear it then.
I hope people understand. I have to be to work at 12, so I have 20 minutes to get to my job.
She is a working woman. Let's get that in mind. Not one of the mentally ill, the drug addicted, or the alcohol abusers among us who make up so large a proportion of the homeless community, according to the authors of this A Nation in Denial. We will be investigating these authors at a later time. Thank you, Barbara. The questions that we didn't get to with Barbara, which I really hope we can at some point, have to do with differences in strategy and tactics around how to get that campground, how to get that emergency shelter, how to make those who profess to be homeless care providers, homeless shelter providers, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the city and the county, which claims to have a responsibility and an interest in dealing with the certainly homeless services, but even more so the rights of people not to be arrested for engaging in innocent behavior, which becomes essential and yet criminalized if you're homeless, such as sleeping at night, such as sitting down during the day on the mall, such as peacefully asking for spare change, and yet all these things become criminal. What's the way to allow these people to have their rights and to make sure that there is a place for all of us in this society as the economic crisis deepens? Now, those of us have been working on this issue for a dozen years or more, I've actually been doing it for 8 or 9 here in the community, have seen what happens when you take politicians at face value. Politicians like Scott Kennedy on the city council, even such well-intentioned politicians as Catherine Byers, supervisors like Marty Wormhout, who actually hasn't come out with any statements on the campground situation, but even somebody like Gary Patton, certainly a very liberal guy in 1985, who helped to stop a county camping ban or make it so that in order to get any areas in the county part of a camping ban, you have to hold actual public hearings, and it becomes a more difficult process so that in most areas of the county of Santa Cruz, it is not illegal to camp. It is, in fact, only illegal in 2 or 3 areas which specific hearings have been held, very small percentage of the county. But nonetheless, sheriffs previously Al Norins and now Mark Tracy, Sheriff's Department, habitually misinform those who are poor, sleeping in their vehicles and so forth, that it is illegal for them to do so, and in fact, it is not. And I believe the River Street Refugees are investigating this issue, and I hope to have them on the air future time to be discussing this. But some of the questions that have come up and that have divided us, indeed, and there are divisions between some of us who are kind of looking in on the River Street refugees and those who are kind of more on the inside, like Barbara, who, although she doesn't live out there, spends a lot of time out there with River Street refugees and was indeed with them for about, 5 or 6 days before they were forced to move by Mayor Mike Rotkin's edict and that of Paul Meursault, who broke the contract with the campers. I'll talk about those differences in a moment, but first let me take this phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, hi. What I think is needed is actually 2 places for people to be able to exist.
Uh-huh.
Is for vehicles, and the other one is for people that want to, you know, be more camping.
Now, are you homeless yourself?
Well,
you don't have to be, but I was just wondering. In fact, I hope you're not.
Yeah, I don't like to fall into categories. I've done all of this. Those things work, and basically what the problem is that there's certain, you know, people we all know in society that don't like to see, you know, people that like live in buses or, you know, have what's called the hippie lifestyle. That's mm-hmm. all they don't want to see, and they want to make all the excuses not to have it happen, mm-hmm. you know, around their area. And that's what it basically boils down to. As far as problems, I was part of the free land movement in California in the late 70s. I lived at a place called Benson's Grove up in Sonoma County where people would, it was basically vehicle-based people. There was zero problems.
Hmm.
Once a week, the police, we know the guy, you know, we knew all the police people. It was up in Sonoma County, after, you know, after Haight-Ashbury went up to into the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
How many people were you up there?
Which place?
Benson, you said?
Benson's Grove.
Uh-huh.
Benson's Grove was across from the university,
mm-hmm.
and, oh, at least 100.
And for how long did this community endure?
Oh, years. Until they finally, you know, I don't know if you've been, if you were around in that area or if anybody else remembers that place or experienced the whole thing that came down in, you know, around
Tell
Sonoma County.
It.
Oh, it's a long story, but eventually the fathers, the city fathers, they weren't, I don't know, or the mothers or whatever they were.
Yeah, right.
Because it included, you know, all kinds. This is a very long story, but anyway, eventually they closed it down.
You know,
because, and then they made it that only, you know, people with the connected with the university, they build a structured place for students only, someplace else, and they kicked everybody out.
Now, what town was this in?
Cotati.
Cotati, okay.
Yes, you ever hear of that place?
Oh, yeah, I've been through Cotati. That's north, that's about 40, 50 miles north of San Francisco.
Exactly, and then up there, there was the biggest open land place almost, you know, in the United States was called Wheeler's Ranch. You ever hear of that?
Yes, I have.
I was part of that.
Mm-hmm. From what years to what years? From when to when were you up there?
Years?
Yeah, like...
You mean hippies keep track of years?
Well, some
I'm
do.
I'm sorry.
Come on,
that's
get it
not
together,
the point.
Baby.
That's absolutely not the point.
Burned out, eh? Now, go ahead.
I mean, it's nothing to do with burned out. It's basically functioning on totally more relevant levels.
Okay,
than,
well, get more relevant. Tell us more.
Well, all this stuff you hear about problems, they're all, basically, there are, you know, some problems, but things work themselves out if they get a chance. People have to be, they have to, look, people that live in houses, right, they fuck up too. You know how many, you know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Why should people, look, you go down to the harbor here, you know how much alcohol gets consumed down there? And that's a state park. You know, it's all upper class, you know, types.
Mm-hmm.
They get drunk like crazy in public down there. Nobody talks about this. People walk around with open containers.
Sure, and it's well known that most violence, or at least up until recently, occurred between people who knew each other in houses. So.
Exactly. So all of this, you know, but the whole social dynamics, like for instance with Benson's Grove, zero problems. These were people, it was all school buses, you know, Volkswagen buses, bread vans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, there was one big Greyhound bus, you know, and those kinds of people, they basically choose to live an alternative lifestyle. They've got their shit together,
mm-hmm.
all right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's people that, you know, nobody, look, if anybody just, they wouldn't even walk in there to get drunk.
Mm-hmm.
It's just totally out of place. Everybody knows this. I mean, you know, of subculture people, they wouldn't go there to really, like, you know, make a big old blow-up with alcohol or something and, you know, smashing everybody's bus windows up or something.
You know, there are two things I want to say about that. First, I think that to some extent, is happening with the River Street refugees, although, you know, no doubt there are alcohol problems that crop up anywhere in society, you know, from one place to another.
Exactly, but...
But the second thing is, you know about rainbow gatherings.
Yes, and that's another thing,
I mean,
okay?
You really have rainbow gatherings, and I'm told, and I haven't been to one, but I'm told by those who have, that there's a special camp for people who are, you know, into drinking, and it's called A Camp, and that's a particular area that those people go to and, you know, that they use, but that other camps just don't have that and monitor themselves in their own way.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I think your point that the attempt to... I think that some social service providers make jobs for themselves by, you know, emphasizing the fact of alcohol, drug abuse, and these mental illness labels.
You don't have to think that's a fact, because
yep.
I know everybody involved. I know all of this stuff, and this is totally correct. This is, you know, basically what it is. It's one group of people that doesn't like another group of people, and you know, look, you know what it is, and I know what it is. The point is, how many people can be convinced, because they don't actually live it, see? Like, you don't, you know, who has lived at Benson's Grove? Who has lived at Wheeler's? You know, for instance, people would go up to Wheeler's to get drunk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, there was, you know, it was 320 25 acres, and you would have all kinds of, you know, things going on. It was a small city.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that everybody was drunk? You know, it's like, you know, some acquaintances would go up and they think, hey, you know, let's go get some hippie chicks or something. Maybe they'll let us in. You know, all kinds of stuff goes on. It was unique. The point is, that's not what Wheeler's actually was.
Well, what do you...
It was real people trying to do a real trip. And, of course, there's going to be, you know, what do you want? Angels?
Right, of course.
Manifesting
of course.
On the free land movement all of a sudden?
Let me ask you this. Are you interested in appearing as a guest on the show to do some more talking about the specifics of the experiences you've had around this stuff? Because I think you sound like you've had a lot of interesting experiences. If you can't...
Yes, of course. I was there for the first rainbow gathering, the whole trip.
Well, it sounds great. Listen, let me give you my phone number on the air because we're running out of time.
Okay,
I got 10
good.
Minutes left. And you can call me, leave your phone number, and we can arrange for you to be on the air. The number to call for you and for anybody else who wants to be on the air is 423. You got a pencil?
Oh, I know your number.
Okay, you
got it. Of course, but do you want to call me?
Yeah, give me your number. Do you want to take it off the air or on the air?
Off the air.
Okay, you're off the air. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And, hey, that sounds like possibly an interesting show upcoming. The caller may be, I think, sounds like he's had a lot of interesting stuff going on with him. And, frankly, I am a history buff, and I love to hear about these past experiments. Here's another phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert, it's John again.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about your...
I got 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's about your. You wanted to talk about the strategy, right?
Yes.
Well, I've got right here in front of me a letter from Birmingham Jail by Martin Luther King. It's about direct action and nonviolent action.
But don't you want to talk to the politicians first?
Let me read this briefly.
Mm-hmm.
You may well ask. This is Martin Luther King. You may well ask, why direct action? Why sit-in marches and so forth? Isn't negotiation a better path? Isn't negotiation a better path? You are quite right in calling for negotiation. Indeed, this is the very purpose of direct action. Nonviolent direct action seeks to create such a crisis and foster such a tension that a community which has constantly refused to negotiate is forced to confront the issue. It seeks so to dramatize the issue that it can no longer be ignored. My citing the creation of tension as part of the work of the nonviolent resistor may sound rather shocking, but I must confess that I am not afraid of the word tension. I have earnestly opposed violent tension, but there is a type of constructive nonviolent tension which is necessary for growth. The purpose of our direct action program is to create a situation so crisis-packed that it will inevitably open the door to negotiation. I therefore concur with you in your call for negotiation. Too long has our beloved, anyways, I'm at the South there, skip over here a moment, and he says, actually, we who engage in nonviolent direct action are not the creators of tension. We merely bring to the surface the hidden tension that is already alive. We bring it out in the open, where it can be seen and dealt with like a boil that can never be cured so long as it is covered up, but must be opened with all its ugliness to the natural medicines of air and light. Injustice must be exposed with all the tensions its exposure creates to the light of human conscience and the air of national opinion before it can be cured. Anyway,
that's
I think that kind of supports some direct action.
And
the people who come around wanting us to back off when that tension occurs aren't doing us a favor.
I think you're right, John.
Anyway, that's from Martin Luther King's letter from Birmingham Jail.
In the library, folks. Read it.
Read it. Right. Bye.
Thanks, John.
So, that is... goes straight to the bullseye. There's really little you can say about that. As I said in a future show, I'm hoping to talk about, there were issues of elitism that we weren't able to get into with Barbara, namely the fact that indeed the River Street refugees have gotten sort of they got a special deal from Mike Rotkin, although it was indeed a deportation out to Brighton State Beach. But, you know, what about the other hundreds of people who can't use the Coral Street open air shelter, who have no place to go? That property, which was closed by Citizens Committee for the Homeless and supported by the City Council when that closure happened, Instead, the focus has all been on a small group of people out of Brighton State Beach. And I like those people, and I think we should support those people, but we have to look at the broader issue, and we can't wait and wait and wait and schmooze ourselves to death by talking to politicians who have already shown that they have no interest in resolving the situation on an immediate basis.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, Robert, could I go off the air for a second?
Sure.
Sorry about the dead mic time. Somebody wanted to be spoken to off the air. I want to remind you, before my show is abruptly brought to an end in 6 minutes, that there are very important issues coming up tomorrow, two very important issues. The first is the infamous curfew for those under 18 years of age in the county, not in the city, but in the county. It's going to come up for a reading, and it'll probably pass 3-2 by the Board of Supervisors. That's going to happen tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, fifth floor of the county building. Doesn't mean you can't influence it. Go up there and speak against it. Speak against it. That's the fifth floor of the county building. You may have to wait a while, like from 9 to 10, somewhere in that area. That's going to show up on the agenda. This is a law that makes it illegal for young people under the ages of 18 to tarry, quote-unquote, after 11 o'clock at night, unless they're returning from a scheduled event, unless they have a note from their mom, unless they're on their front porch or in the sidewalk in front of their house, if they have a house. There's no provision for dealing with homeless people. It's a misdemeanor. So it can be punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. The sheriff promises it'll only be a warning, and then it'll be maybe a little essay or something, but none of that is in the law. The sheriff can do what he wants. So it's something you should look to tomorrow, a Board of Supervisors, a curfew for youth, so-called youth protection curfew. God save us from such protections. Then at 3:30 in the afternoon, more insidious bigotry in action. The merchants are going to try to close down the hippie corner parking lot at Cathcart and Pacific. That is to say, they are going to attempt to wall it off completely. And not only wall it off, but wall off a section beyond the current parking lot that extends toward the next block, so that there will be no place for people to gather or meet in the former Ford's parking lot. Could this be connected with a Swenson and the Seaside Company buying Santa Cruz Ford's lot? Could be, but it's going to be in escrow for at least 90 days, according to the Sentinel story of February 2nd, front page, Swenson Seaside Company buying Santa Cruz Ford's lot. So the idea of closing it off to people and cars, it's a naked, blatant, completely shameless attempt to remove a bunch of people. And that you would say, well, is this some sort of radical interpretation, some sort of paranoid view? No, the downtown commission that is forwarding this proposal to city council, which will be on the agenda at 3:30 tomorrow, actually said so. We want to get rid of these people. We don't care if we lose parking places downtown. We don't care if Randall Kane, owner of the Catalyst, complains that there shouldn't be a fence there because they need the parking lot. We just want to get rid of those people downtown. Are they going to get rid of us? Are we going to go away? Feed the People has been feeding every night there virtually throughout the week, and combined with Food Not Bombs, looks like a pretty sturdy presence there. Now, what they're going to try to do is they're going to try to build there fast and then enforce the anti-sitting laws, which make it illegal to sit 10 feet from a building. I've always said we should be challenging these anti-sitting laws yesterday, if not today, and certainly tomorrow, because they're going to use them to drive poor people out of town. Also happening at the 3:30 council session tomorrow at City Council Chambers on Tuesday, February 13th, I call it Terrible Tuesday the 13th in my latest flyer, is a proposal to locate change-making machines at Maple Street, which is up near Zoccoli's. That's going to be interesting. And another one at Soquel, which is the street that kind of runs into, well, a little bit this side of the other side of the Del Mar Theater. The idea of a change-making machine is, yeah, you want to help out those folks who need change for their meters, but you also want to stop people from sitting down. They can't sit within 50 feet of a change-making machine, thanks to your liberal mayor, Mike Rotkin, thanks to your Gandhi nonviolent expert, Scott Kennedy. Thanks even to Catherine Byers and the others who voted in almost all of these anti-homeless laws. and have taken no action. And Celia Scott has taken no action in the last 2 years to repeal these laws, even though she has at least one vote, Catherine Byers, to support her in an attempt to reopen that public dialogue. I feel that she has betrayed her mandate to the people in not so doing. I think her conservative approach undermines us and sets the stage for these new merchant takeovers. That's what's happening. The merchants will now try to put change-making machines in on these two locations, and they will try to put us in a position where it becomes illegal to sit down virtually everywhere on the mall, unless you want to pay money at a cafe. You know, and now they're going, as you heard earlier in the show, they're going after Skidmark's Bob, Feel Free, Just Kidding. You know, it is indeed, as Pat Buchanan called it in his own way, although ironically from the other side of the political spectrum, a cultural war. It's the gentrification war. You have money or you get out of town. It's no longer our town, it's their town. It's the merchants' town. And the merchants have come up with this unholy deal with city council. Apparently the city council was so spooked after the earthquake that they just wanted to be pals with the merchants that they're now willing to sell the entire store and sell everything down the river. Come tomorrow, 3:30, city council, to make sure they don't sell down the river, the Cathcart and Pacific corner, where people meet and gather, and you have a significant counterculture developing in town, as well as these change-making machines that are appearing on the mall. Now, these are holding actions. We're trying to stop this stuff from happening. We need, of course, some real positive stuff, like Bob LaMonica and others have suggested about a closing of the mall so people can, you know, have more pedestrian access. We need a real kind of merchants market more than one day a week. We need to have the kind of thing Berkeley has where people can sell their wares on the street. You know, we need a mediation, not the hosts downtown. We need an end to anti-homeless laws downtown. We need an end to the sleeping ban so that there are legal places for people to sleep. We need health providers and service providers and emergency shelter providers who are not big rip-off artists who want to put in million-dollar community house projects while dumping the only open-air shelter program in the country, the only campground in the country. We need all these things. And what we've got is what you see, an increased gentrification effort, an increased yuppification drive. Now, I would talk forever, but the next talk show host has shown up and is rolling up his sleeves. He's got his fists out in case I don't make a move fast. He's gonna drag me out of here, kicking and screaming. I would have liked to talk to you about it. I've kind of had a whole bunch of clippings arranged about good signs nationally. Pelican Bay, the judge is saying we want better facilities in Pelican Bay. Both Bill Buckley and Lee Kornstrom, two Neanderthals in many respects, agree there should be drug legalization. South Africa has got a squatter movement that's working on land. An Orange County judge has been disciplined. And we're hoping we can see some discipline of local judges. And you want to weigh that against the bad signs, which I was going to read you about, like a decision upholding the so-called indecency ruling on TV, which means that they don't have to prove it's obscene, just that it's indecent. There's a whole mass of horrible assembly bills that just got out of the Republican Assembly that I'm hoping to have brought forward next time we talk. Welfare cuts. There's an attempt to limit your access to public records. ID cards are becoming the norm, even though they're not the law. There's racial prejudice in Canada I wanted to talk about. The anti-terror bill is going to make a reemergence, I'm afraid, and Coburn, left-wing columnist who writes very well, had a lot to say about that. There was a death in Indiana around an abortion law, which I think is very significant. Internet censorship has been big. Nonviolent people are in for three strikes, and there have been several stories on that which are worth following. We got lots of stuff that we couldn't follow today. I was hoping to call McPherson's office, that's our assembly person, and he was going to give me the update on how he, as well as selling out gay rights, has been dealing with these other issues of civil rights violations. If you can't get to the supervisors meeting to oppose the curfew, call them at 454-2200. Again, 454-2200, and ask Simons and Buttes to just say no to the curfew. I was also going to read you the results of the Velvet Venom Awards, which we will have to put ahead for another time. An update on Lisa Ann, the woman whose child was stolen from her under the eyes of dozens of people at the Union Grove parking lot about 3 months ago. and do a follow-up on the Robbie Berlin trial. But again, we'll hope to get to some of this next time. If you want to be on the air, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, show up at 9:45 at Taco Bell on Friday. I'll be there. That's at Pacific and Laurel Street downtown, and I will swoop you into the studio if you want to be. If you want to put something on the air on tape and you can't show up, leave a message on my machine, however long, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We will be returning at 10 o'clock on Friday with Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and I'm going to seg you out, and we'll be moving in with our next talk show host who is here.
This is Bill Clinton here. I just want to say that I'm sick of all this talk about Whitewater, all this talk, rumors about Hillary. I know myself personally that Hillary would never do anything immoral. I mean, frankly, that's why I had to go to all those other women.
Yeah, back in Arkansas, I was the jock of Little Rock. The pretty girls I met, yeah, they made my knees go knock. I'd ask a friendly trooper, watch the door and all the phones. I love my women workers, but I don't know Paula Jones. She called me the fondler, she said that I fondled her. My hands went around. Yeah, I'm a fine example for you kiddies as the press. Don't do what Clinton does, or just to do what Clinton says. The jury will be worried, they'll be full of disbelief. When they hear from Paula,
was it boxers? Was it great?
Did I do a blunder there? She said that my underwear and pants went down. Well, how can she distinguish me from other fellas in the fifth down? I'll make my mark on a history when the jury discovers my distinguishing mark. Yeah, the right wing hopes that Paula is the new Anita Hill. The lippers won't help Paula, no, but then a shot you will. I tell the women voters that I'm not like Clarence B.
Clarence liked a can of Coke.
Pepsi is for me, I give you these promises. Just like Clarence Thomas is. I'm hanging around, oh yeah.
PBS's budget will be zero. Watch the Congress pluck our TV hero. Pack up all those feather clothes,
hit the road,
pointy nose. Bye bye, Big Bird.
PBS, what a commie twat.
Liberal show, that's all they got. Left wing Big Bird. If their budget funding isn't carried, Bert and Ernie finally can get married. We know every puppet trick. I love you.
Gee, that's sick.
Barney, bye bye.
The dinosaur's history, but the bird is in. Yeah, this Big Bird can make you rich in the right market niche.
Big Bird beer ass.
No more teaching alphabets, let him sell cigarettes.
Big Bird camel.
We'll buy peas and carrots from Big Bird's eye.
Let's divide his profits up in thirds, guys.
He needs a series, his own show.
The Big Bird 90210. Big Bird.
Hey, I can hook you up with Feather Locklear.
Bye-bye.
Capital Steps present a reading from How the Gingrinch Stole Congress. Every liberal in Libville liked Congress a lot. But Gingrinch.
And now for something completely different. Free Radio Santa Cruz. Don't tell your friends. Basically, what we're doing today is a reggae show. We got some shows coming up locally, including Bernie Spear and Desmond Decker this week. Right now, I'll hit you up a little Bob.
What me know, if you keep on coming, then it'll go over.